Chapter 12. Charles in Court Again. At the Crown Court, Charles stood before the judge wearing his gardening clothes and his hair in a ponytail. The Queen was furious. She had told him to wear a suit and to get his hair cut. In her opinion, he looked like a poor, uneducated person. Beverly stood next to Charles. She knew she hadn't assaulted anyone and was sure that the jury would understand this. PC Ludlow was in the witness box, trying to remember the lies he had told at the previous trial at the magistrate's court. The Queen saw that he didn't have his notebook with him.
"PC Ludlow, did you take notes that day?" asked Oliver Labutt, the lawyer for the defence.
"Yes, sir," said Ludlow quietly. "I wrote them in a notebook."
"Have you brought this notebook with you?" asked Labutt.
"No, sir," said Ludlow even more quietly.
"No? Why not?" asked Labutt.
"Because I dropped it in the river, sir," replied Ludlow.
Labutt smiled a cruel smile.
"And why did you drop your notebook in the river?"
"I was rescuing a cat that had fallen into the water, sir," Ludlow said.
Labutt looked shocked. The jury looked at Ludlow with new respect. Next, it was Charles's turn to be questioned about why he had been arrested.
"It was just a stupid mistake," he said. "I saw a policeman pulling Beverly's arm, and I ran to rescue her."
"Maybe it was just a mistake to you," said the prosecutor. "But PC Ludlow, who is sensitive enough to rescue a cat, was badly injured when you assaulted him, wasn't he?"
"No,"
said Charles, red in the face.
"He wasn't badly injured at all. PC Ludlow hurt his chin because he fell on the ground."
The whole court looked at PC Ludlow's bearded chin. The prosecutor said dramatically,
"His chin was so scarred that PC Ludlow will have to wear a beard for the rest of his life."
In his final speech, Labutt tried to defend Charles, but said all the wrong things. The Queen saw that Labutt was making Charles's situation worse.
"Members of the jury," Labutt said, "this man has had a difficult childhood. He hardly saw his parents because they often travelled abroad. At a young age, he was sent to boarding school. Every night, he thought about his home and cried into his pillow. Is it surprising that he became violent? This pathetic man needs our compassion. What he did was wrong. It can never be right to assault a policeman."
"But I didn't assault a policeman," shouted Charles. "Whose side are you on?"
The judge ordered Charles to be quiet. Nobody in the jury seemed to care about Charles's unhappy childhood. They didn't look at him when they went out to decide on their verdict. Labutt didn't look at Charles either. He was too busy calculating his expenses. 10 minutes later, the jury came back into court. Beverly took Charles's hand and smiled encouragingly at him as they both waited to hear their verdicts. A member of the jury stood up.
"We, the jury, find Beverly Threadgold not guilty of assaulting a policeman," he announced.
The people watching the trial applauded, and Tony Threadgold ran towards his wife, and they stood hugging and kissing in the middle of the courtroom. Everybody watched them with smiles on their faces. Then it was time for Charles's verdict. He was not as fortunate as Beverly. The verdict was guilty, and he would have to go to prison. The Queen showed no emotion when she heard the verdict, but Diana started to cry. As Charles was taken to the cells, he mouthed something to Diana. She mouthed back,
"What?"
But he had already disappeared. That evening, the family gathered around the Queen Mother's bed. The old lady was very ill. The family watched Philomena Toussaint feed the Queen Mother her soup.
"Open your mouth, woman," said Philomena. "I haven't got all day, you know."
The Queen Mother opened her eyes and her mouth and drank all the soup.
"I'm really grateful, Mrs. Tucson," the Queen said. "I couldn't get her to eat anything."
"It was a shock for her to learn that her grandchild has been sent to prison," Philomena said, wiping the Queen Mother's chin.
The Queen Mother's bedroom was small and crowded, and Diana was hot and uncomfortable. She went out and opened the front door. William and Harry were playing with a gang of boys. Diana thought she should stop them, but she had no strength for an argument, so she shouted,
"Bedtime at 8, boys,"
and went back inside the Queen Mother's bungalow. As she checked her makeup in the small mirror in the hallway, she tried to remember the message that Charles had mouthed to her when he was being taken to prison. It had looked like "water the garden," but how could he think about his stupid garden at such a tragic moment? Diana said, "water the garden," into the mirror several times. She turned away sadly. Whatever it certainly wasn't "I love you, Diana," or "be brave, my love," or any of the other romantic things people said in films. She thought enviously of how Tony Threadgold had run to embrace his wife when she was found not guilty. Then the Threadgolds had gone off to celebrate at a big family party. The royal family, on the contrary, had simply climbed into the back of Spiggy's van and driven back to their own homes in Hell Close. Nobody had said a word to her, or tried to console her. They were not a very emotional family. It was the worst day of Charles's life. He hadn't expected to be found guilty or to go to prison, but here he was. He was taken into a small cell with two bunk beds along opposite walls and a wooden table in the middle. There were three other men in the cell.
"How long did you get, Charlie?" asked one of the men.
6 months. Charles already felt he couldn't breathe in the crowded cell. He tried to look out of the little barred window high in the wall. All he could see was some reddish sky and the top branches of a tree. He thought about his garden. He was worried that Diana would forget to water the plants. There was so much to do there. He must write to her immediately with full instructions.
"Have any of you got some writing paper?" he asked his cellmates.
"Do you want to write a letter?"
asked one of them.
"Yes," said Charles. "Several, actually."
He had promised to write to his mother daily, and he was considering writing to the governor about the overcrowded conditions in prison.
"You have to get permission for a letter. One a week. Sorry, mate," explained another cellmate.
Charles couldn't believe it. Only one letter a week? The rules here were almost as bad as at boarding school. Then the light went out. Charles climbed onto the free bunk bed, thought of his garden, and finally fell asleep.